Hello, 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 everybody. Welcome to Unrestricted. I'm your host, Ben Lieber. First and foremost, I just want to say Merry Christmas. I hope everybody had a great Christmas. I hope it was safe. It was fun. I hope you ate a lot and you drank a lot and you filled yourself with family and friends and all your loved ones. So anyway, my episode this week is live from Mystic Lake again. You know, the last episode I had with Scott Studwell and the one before that with Rich Gannon. It's so nice that Mystic Lake is able to host, bring in a live audience, set up this fantastic stage. And I always want to kind of keep a Vikings theme with those because there's a lot of Viking fans that want to come down. So I brought in Ed McDaniel, was a linebacker. Everybody kind of knows him around Vikings world as Eddie Mack. He played all 10 seasons for your Minnesota Vikings. He's regarded as one of the 50 most memorable Vikings in Vikings history. He finished with 19 and a half sacks and 4 interceptions, and he played from 1992 to 2001, sort of the glory days of Minnesota Vikings football. I think he only had one losing season in those 10 years with the Minnesota Vikings. And he was a fifth-round draft pick out of Clemson University back in 1992. I think the most important takeaway here is if you don't know Eddie Mack, you're going to get to know Eddie Mack. He is a ball of positivity. He's nothing but smiles, sunshine, has a great outlook on life. And when you hear about his background and this idea that, you know, if he didn't choose the right path and focus on football, he could have been, you know, a chicken plucker or whatever he was calling it, as you hear in the episode. He could have been working on a chicken farm doing just menial work. And so he was very inspired to do more with his life. And I think that you're really going to enjoy just how he approaches life back then in college, you know, growing up in South Carolina, all the way through his professional career. So, ladies and gentlemen, here he is, Eddie Mack on Unrestricted. Yes, clap it up, clap it up. Okay, welcome, welcome everybody. My name is Ben Lieber. I'm the host of the Unrestricted podcast that you can find on Apple, Spotify, iHeart podcast platforms. Thank you guys so much. Thank you to Mystic Lake for having us out here. We do these periodically about every 3 to 4 weeks. We do live recordings with some Vikings legends here at Mystic Lake. And I also, some housekeeping stuff here. The Miller Lite has sent 2 support staff members. They're waving their hands right there. And we have Feliciana and we have Kaylee, right? Kaylee and Feliciana. They're the two lovely ladies right there with their hands up. If you guys need any Miller Lite, anything like that, they are here to support us as well. I'll let you guys know that the way this thing is going to go, it's about an hour-ish. Look, if we're having a great conversation with my guests, we'll go a little bit longer. But basically, it's me blabbing along, asking questions, having a conversation for about 40 to 45 minutes. And after that, I'm going to turn it over to you guys in the audience to ask questions. You guys can prepare yourselves now, or if something comes up in the conversation that you want to follow up on, feel free. We'll hopefully have a mic or just speak loudly and my guest can answer them. So without further ado, the man sitting to my right is one of the best Minnesota Vikings legends of all time. 10 years all with the Minnesota Vikings, playing my favorite position at linebacker. We have Mr. Ed McDaniel, Eddie Mack.
Hi there. How y'all doing? How you doing? A great day to be in Minnesota with this nice weather. Where is this global warming coming in? Come on, bring me some global warming. We had it for a day.
Yeah, we had it for a day.
What happened to it? Then reality, it came back to life. Now, this is Minnesota weather.
I got to be honest with you. When it was warm that one day, now, don't get me wrong, I was rocking shorts, and I had my window down in my car for a little bit. I didn't like it. I was kind of disappointed. I'm like, man, it is December. It's Minnesota. It's supposed to be cold. It was too warm.
And you talk about you see grass. Everything was melted. I'm like, grass in December? I'm like, wow, what's going on here? But I knew the cold weather was coming though.
I know. So you just enjoyed the day then because you knew the freezing cold was coming back.
We got Canada above us. They ain't going to let this happen to Minnesota. That cold air going to come. Bam.
And you're a South Carolina guy.
I'm a South Carolina guy. Been there, South Carolina to my heart. Been up here for 30. Been up here for 30 years. You know, the Vikings got me out of the South in the heat. I love the cold weather. Give me that. We wake up in the morning, South Carolina, 90 degrees at 9 o'clock. Come on. It could just get worse. Give me this weather. Oh, you can put on your underclothes and all kind of stuff.
He's wearing a base layer on his pants. He's got jeans on and a base layer. You are ready to go,
yes,
man.
Yes, I am.
God, you're going to be hot, though, now.
No, I'm good. I'm good. It's best to have it on than not have it.
So I get asked this question a lot. And, you've made your home here, and I did not make such a drastic move. I grew up in South Dakota, spent some time in Southern California, which was amazing.
Well, you didn't go too far.
I did not go too far. So this climate and these people and the values here are nothing new to me. But somebody from South Carolina, what was it and what is it about Minnesota that made you want to stay here?
What people ask me that a lot also, but the thing is, I could be in South Carolina. I love the growth up here. Love that. South Carolina, I could be watching television at the house or grilling at the house. I know every car going down the road. I'd be like, okay, there go my uncle there. There go my aunt. There go my brother. Uh-oh. Oh, that's my sister. Lock the doors. Lock the doors. And up here, you know, it's slow paced back there. 4,000 people back in Batesburg, Leesville, South Carolina. And up here, it's growth. 30 years ago, we only had little six. And I'm talking about you. My first time in here, like played golf out here this past summer, my first time in several years. I'm like, this is a mini Vegas now. The growth up here, better education, it's great. You can't beat it.
So what was the biggest, when you were growing up, 4,000 people, I can sort of relate. My town was about 9,000 people, so you know it's twice the size. But
man,
we're not.
You had to up me again. Come on now.
We're not talking about we're not talking about a thriving metropolitan area where I grew up. What was the closest big city to you when you were growing up?
Growing up, closest big city was Columbia. I lived dead in the middle between Columbia and Augusta, Georgia, and I went to Clemson. Clemson is like a three-hour drive from my hometown, and the University of South Carolina is like 45 minutes. And as a child, you know, we didn't have that kind of money to go to a game. So my best friend, uncle, lived by like 2 miles from the stadium. We would go watch the game, University of South Carolina, Gamecocks. So, yes, I'm a Gamecock fan, but, hey, went to Clemson. I'm a bigger Clemson fan. We would go to his uncle's house and watch the game there outside, and we'll hear the cheers of the stadium and the fans. And that's how we was part of the game. But half of my town was either Carolina or Clemson.
Right.
Yes.
So given the fact that, you know, to kind of timestamp this podcast, the national signing day, the early signing day for college athletes was recently. Now, that's all moved and all that stuff. You ended up at Clemson. Did you have an interesting recruiting story? You know, how did you get to Clemson? And did you turn people down? Like, was that the only offer?
Yes, yes, yes. Yep. I turned some guys down.
You were a South Carolina fan. A guy did you not get recruited by the Gamecocks?
A guy wanted me to work in his chicken house.
Excuse me?
Yes, a guy wanted me to work in his chicken house because I did that in the summer for him, and I turned him down. But the University of South Carolina University of South Carolina offered me pretty much a grant in aid and talking about, you know, look that up. You have to pay that back. And Clemson offered me a full scholarship. And Clemson gave me and LeVon Kirkland, and he's for about like an hour away from me, Pageland, South Carolina, gave me and LeVon Kirkland their last scholarship. And the funny part about it, they were talking about we was undersized, not tall enough, not big enough. They were like, okay, we'll give y'all two. And because we was pretty good in, you know, 3A school, we was pretty good in football. So they gave us a scholarship. We were the only two guys that played the longest from Clemson.
Really?
Besides Dwayne Dawkins.
So they took a chance on you guys.
Yes.
Because you are under-recruited,
yep.
And then you go out there and prove everybody wrong.
Yep, sure did. And that's basically life. Yeah. You get up each and every day to fight. And there's, you know, you're playing sports, that's like you would know. You're playing football, playing linebacker, 225 pounds. You're looking at an offensive lineman, 345 to 350. You're in a fight for 60 plays. You know, so that's part of life. So it's, are you going to get up? Are you going to fight? Or are you going to try to figure a way around this guy, this obstacle? Just like track. Are you going to go around it or are you going to hurdle it? Because you got another couple to go. And that's, it didn't matter who gave me the opportunity. They gave me an opportunity, and I was very appreciative of Clemson. Then on top of that, Chester McLaughlin, me and him came out at the same time, me, Chester, LeVon Kirkland, and he come up to me my last year, our last year in high college. He said, Ed, you know something? You need to straighten up. You need to straighten up. I said, man, what you talking about? You need to straighten up. You may have an opportunity to get drafted. I said, oh, whatever. I'm going back home and working this chicken, with this this farmer working this chicken house. Next thing you know, for a whole year, everything we did, I did everything that he said, straightened up a little bit, and I was drafted by the Vikings in the fifth round. So Chester got drafted in the first round. So we all at his house, and next thing you know, we say, hey, we're going to go downtown. We're going to party. I said, well, I haven't heard my name. This was like the second round LeVon Kirkland went. So we got all the guys. We're like, hey, let's go downtown. So we go downtown, third round. I'm like, man, nothing. Fourth round, nothing. So we're headed downtown. So I go back to my apartment, and I'm going to change clothes. So next thing I know, the phone rang. So I get the phone and say, hello. I say, hello. Well, this is the Minnesota Vikings. I said, man, I told you I'd be down there. Let me go use the restroom. Bam. I'm thinking this. One of my boys playing a joke on me. So I go get dressed, and the phone ring again. They said, well, this is money. They said, this is the Minnesota Vikings we're trying to get. I said, shut up, man. Stop playing with me. Here I come. I'm bringing some beer down there. Oh, beer down there. Guess what it was? Miller, too. So
easy so plug.
I go get the beer, come back, phone ring again. The guy said, this is Money Kiffin for the Minnesota Vikings. I said, what, man, Money Kiffin? Who is that? And it hit me. My first year when I got to Clemson, we was on a little probation. Money had a dealing. He was at North Carolina State. And he told something on us that got us on our probation. Oh. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is for real. So I run downstairs to the other guys. I said, Minnesota just tucked me in the fifth round. They said, what? We're going out. I said, yes, it's on me.
Of course. Now, you sound like a guy when you're answering the phone. Not only did you not expect a call, you sound like you were pre-partying pretty good anyway.
Oh, yeah. Because you love
high school. You answered the phone call the first time at about point one.
Oh, yeah. Man, it was just so amazing when you get that telephone call and to go back there and share it with your friends and then share it with your family, because it all started then, the real world. Like I told my high school kids, I said, hey, look here. Do not be in a rush to graduate. I said, this is the best time of your life. You don't have to pay for anything. Your parents pay for everything. Stay back a couple years. Be 25 when you graduate, okay? I said, when you go to college, you're going to have fun. Then from there, the real world comes. So when, you know, once I got up here in Minnesota, you got to fight again. You know, you're on the side. People give you opportunity, but back then, fifth round, you were going to get cut. You have to prove yourself, and that's all it was. Just needed a shot.
Yeah, it's an interesting piece of advice you give to high school kids, because I think it's so true, but it's also such a delicate balance between, you find some of these high school kids, especially let's just keep it with football, that are highly motivated. Yep. They want something so bad. They want to get that scholarship. They want to get seen. They want to go out there and produce, and they want to have all these dreams and stuff and check all these boxes. But you also want to tell them just to be present and just like, just enjoy yourself.
What I tell the kids, and an old college coach told me, whenever things got bad, he would come and tell us, have fun. Have fun, baby. Don't look like you're having fun. He said, have fun. But what having fun means, do everything that we worked on. Do everything that I taught you. And then you would be having fun. You're not having fun now because you're thinking too much. Relax, have fun, and let's get this done. We have too many kids now today. Hey, anybody play football? Everybody raise their hand. Hey, I'm not talking about anybody played Madden last night. You have one kid. You know, nowadays people have more things, kids have more things to get into without actually trying to do the dirty work. And that's come from home too. Parents, you got to be parents. You got to make these kids do things. Hey, go wash them dishes. Hey, go on, walk the dog. Go do things like, because that's translate to us. Because besides the parents up here, they got the football, they have sports coaches, military, and community. We just an extension of y'all trying to mold these young kids into young men and young women. But we all need help. We all here to help them.
What do you say to parents in this day and age when they say, hey, I've got a kid, I've got a young boy that wants to play football. He's a fourth grader, first year of tackle football. Is the game safe? What do I do? What sort of advice do you give those parents about the game of football? Because, you know, there's a lot of negative attention on the game of football right now.
I would give them two advice. And we were just talking about this the other day. And that parent has the right to anything you do, you have to think about the pros and cons. And my kid, if I can do it, trust me, I'm looking at my kid is not better than me. And my kid gonna do it. If I had to do some hard work, my kid gonna have to do some hard work. But my kid gonna enjoy life better than I did. Okay. So that's one lesson. Like I tell a parent, you want your kid to play football, that's great. But little Eddie going to be playing football, and that's one less kid little Eddie have to worry about competing against going into the draft. Okay? But, you know, you still think about, I've been playing tackle football ever since I was 7 years old. Everything has its pros and cons, anything we do in life. I come in here and steal somebody's pocketbook, yeah, I probably get the money, but by the time I hit that door, I'm going to jail. Everything got pros and cons, just like us playing in the pros. Yes, you know I had like five surgeries. That comes with the job. But we can't play like I had a coach always play scared. We can't look at the negative part because we look at the negative part, that kid may never have the opportunity to do anything and excel at anything. Because sports, what I get from kids, when they come talk to us, coach, I learned so much from you. But he went in a totally different direction in business and all that stuff. That's what we learn from sports. How to channel what you want to do and go after it. So when they pull them out, I have some kids that I know would never get on the field. But I made sure I come up and talk to that kid every day to keep an M to it and tell this kid, I said, you're going to be a coach. So come stand by me and tell me what would you do to this player right here. And we would talk about the game. And you just have to keep your kid involved and get them out of the house off the computers and stuff.
Yeah, and I think that's sort of the advice that I give too, is that especially when we're talking, you know, middle school football and high school football, that the risk reward, when you tally all that up, there's way more reward out of it than risk. You know, it is the one sport that it's 100% injury rate. It just is going to happen. You know, so if you're a concerned mother, a concerned father, and you're worried about your son getting hurt, I think you just have to be comfortable with the fact that they will get hurt.
Definitely.
There's going to be an injury. I mean, there's no way that you can play the game through practicing games and not get hurt. So
we had more kids hurt this year that never played. I'm looking at kids. Now, explain to me why each and every week something is hurt on you. Each and every week your foot hurt, your ankle hurt. I said, you haven't got on the field. But that is... You're going to get hurt.
What are they getting hurt from?
Yeah, that's what I don't know. I said, you play linebacker? I said, you never hear. But you're going to get hurt. You know, like I try to tell you, you can't make everybody happy. And one thing in sports, at the end of the day, somebody going to win, somebody going to lose. Somebody going to be cheering. Somebody going to be sad. It's going to happen. So you can't dictate the outcome of sports. I said, that comes with it. And we learn something from all that experience. And like when I go back today, I always tell kids, it's not all about winning. Okay? But I love to win. I say, I love to win. We're going to have a good time when we win. But I say, if we lose, we're going to learn from it. Every time, growing up, every time, I look at a loss just like a win. But a loss, I make sure I keen in on everything I did wrong. On a win, they say, how many tackles? Ed, you had about like 10 tackles. I look at like the 3 missed tackles I had. But I can smile. I got 10 tackles. Coach ain't firing me this week. Hey, who's next?
Well, I think that's sort of what I was alluding to in the fact that the risk reward, the rewards are, yes, it's team bonding, it's all that stuff. But when it comes to football, now I'll kind of just separate that from the other sports. There's no other sport in my mind that challenges you in a way that football does because it's so physical and so contact-driven.
Yes. And it's you know how it's playing linebacker. It's so quick mentally. Mm-hmm. And like I went up there with my kids. I said, look here, baby. I said, this is like a ballet. I said, it's pieces moving around. I said, whenever you can see all these pieces, I'm talking about all these pieces. I said, whenever you can see this guy moving in motion, the offensive lineman going here, this guy doing this, the guys in front of you doing that. And you right there to make the play. I said, it's so much you can see. I said, I can see that in all of you. And I can see the ones that can't pick it up. I can see the one I see the ones in their eyes that have that glare. Like, I understand it, but no one actually told me this. Coach, can you talk to me? Tell me, how do you see this? And how can you help me see it? Love that game. Football, you got 11 guys out there. But at the same time, all those pieces go together. Then it triggers something up here because you do not have Windows 1999. You got that updated version 2050. Nobody knows about that 2050 yet. And you're like, I saw this play before. This display, bam, you're right there. That's what I love about football.
Yeah. There's so much preparation that goes into just, you know, small amounts of performance that, you know, I think it really, so for all the parents that are hopefully listening, you know, right now or when they download this podcast, that, you know, football, A, your child's going to get hurt. That's 100%. But they're also going to learn a lot about themselves. There's no other sport that tests you as mentally, physically, and emotionally. And I think it's a great metaphor for life because you could be feeling yourself in a game and you could be like, Eddie Mack over here with 10 tackles and you're feeling yourself. But guess what? On the next play, if you're not keyed in and you're focused in, you're going to get your ass kicked.
Trust me.
And I think it's great for humility because every play is its own little battle and you either win or lose.
I didn't realize they had birds in the top of the dome. Trust me.
You saw some, huh?
An offensive lineman caught me. Threw me by like 5 yards in the air, and I came down about like 10 seconds. I'm like, oh man, what happened here? I'm like, wow, there's some birds up there. It was the sport, like he was just saying, Lieber was just saying, what you get out of it is what you're gonna put in it. I tore up my knee twice. Told you I had 5 surgeries. That made me love the sport more than actually playing because when you have surgery, you got to start, as a child, you got to start crawling, walking, and getting back up there to their level. Knowing that somebody got your job now and you got to get back to that level to take your job back. And you have to go through all that and it's a process. And that makes you love the sport more.
You know, it's so fascinating to bring it sort of in the present time. You know, Garrett Bradbury, the Vikings starting center for a lot of years, you know, he had a bout with COVID. He had to sit out. And then his replacement, Mason Cole, played so well that, you know, he took his job for 2 weeks. And then they kind of moved Mason Cole over to right guard, and Bradbury got his job back. But he just gave a press conference talking about how it was the best thing for him, kind of like you're saying.
Yeah.
And we're just talking 2 or 3 weeks of being outside the game, not when you blow your knee out and you've got a big-time reconstructive surgery like Eddie Mack did. But even in, like, 3 weeks, the perspective that he gained of, like, damn, like, this job is fleeting. Like, I'm not guaranteed tomorrow.
No, it's always – I got my job because the guy in front of me got hurt.
Is that right?
Yes, and I haven't looked back since. So it's always a youth movement, and then out of those 10 years, I think once I started, every other year they kept drafting another guy to replace me. And they got Dwayne Rudd 1 year, drafted in first round, fast guy, faster than a cat. The coach said, Ed, you know, so they were like, well, we're going to move you to Mike, move him to your position. You need to teach him everything you know. Huh, for real? So you want me to teach the guy that's going to take my job? Boy, y'all going to wonder how that went. We missed a couple pages in the playbook. But, yeah, each and every year, someone can take your job. Each and every year you could get hurt, someone still can take your job. There's always a youth movement. And that – with that in the back of your head, because nothing is guaranteed, it keeps you competitive. And it keeps you competitive in life. That's like everything you do. You get up every day, you're ready for a fight.
It does. It does make you sort of fight for every day to kind of prove yourself. Like,
yes,
that was a little bit of my mantra when I was a player, and I don't know if it was the right way to do it, but, you know, I really woke up every day like, I got to prove myself all over again. And sometimes it can be exhausting, and you have those little mental fights with yourself, but... And whether it's real or not, you sort of fabricate that so you build that drive to go out there and compete every day. And I think the interesting point that Eddie Mack brought up, and I think hopefully this gives some perspective to the people out in the public as you're listening, think about your job. Think about whatever it is you do. It doesn't matter. I don't give examples. Just think about what you do for a living. And your organization spends a lot of money, let's say, i.e. a first-round draft pick, to take your job. And then they're going to try to spin it. It's like, I want you to be a quote-unquote good teammate and teach this young cat the ropes and teach him the playbook. And you're like, why? Why? So I can train him to take my job? I don't want to do that. But then they look at you and say, you're being a bad teammate if you don't. They're like,
yes,
what kind of a mind mess is this?
Yes. That's it. Like we were saying, that's life, because – How many colleges do we have? How many people graduate in a year? They're going somewhere. They're going in the working industry. They're coming to take somebody's job. So, hey, that's what I love about football. That's what I love about sports, because each and every year you're not guaranteed. Like life, big fella above, you're not guaranteed anything.
We are supported by my buddy Pat Kelly and his insurance business, Wexford Harbor Insurance. They've been my insurance provider for years, and I can't recommend them enough. I used to be with one of those big box companies, and I just thought all insurance was relatively the same, but it's not. Every family has different needs, whether it's the number of kids or cars, boats, personal items, homes, umbrella protection, whatever it is, Wexford Harbor can tailor the coverage to you. They will find the best fit and value to save you money, but give you the best protection available. They can do that because they're an independent family-owned company that has access to over 40 different carriers. You're not locked into one company's group of coverage silos. Pat and his partner, Scott Michael Bust, will optimize and craft a personalized insurance package for you and your family. With over 50 years of experience between the two of them, they will give you the attention, service, and value you deserve. And their reach is far and wide, people. They service Minnesota, Iowa, Wisconsin, Colorado, and for you snowbirds, Arizona and Florida. Check them out at wexford-harbor.com/unrestricted. That's wexford-harbor, wexford-harbor.com/unrestricted. And you can email them at info@wexford-harbor.com.
Let's go back real quick to that phone call that you had at Clemson. And your point one when you answered the phone, and then you're going out and party with the boys. When did it actually sink into you that, like, damn, man, I was this undersized high school kid that Clemson gave me a chance. I went out, I balled out, I was an All-American, and now I'm a professional football player. Like, when did that all, do you remember, was there a pinnacle moment, maybe hanging out with your family the next couple of days and talking about it, and it all kind of sunk in, or was it, or did it never really sink in? It just kind of like came
naturally. It actually never really sinked in because drafted in the fifth round, nothing was guaranteed.
You never felt like you made it?
No, huh? It was another obstacle that I had to jump across. I, you know, went to Clemson redshirted, and the coach, the linebacker, Miles Aldridge, linebacker coach, he asked me on a little football camp we went to, he said, will you hit anybody? I said, stand up right there. I hit you right now. And so I was redshirted that year. And the following year, by the third game of the season, he put me in, then turned back. But I had to take the job. I had to earn the job. And from that perspective, every time I did something, I was like, okay, you got a foot. Like one of our coaches said, hey, when you got a man down, keep your foot on your neck, on his neck. It was always, I was thinking there's a foot on my neck, and I'm going to fight that foot each and every day. But once I got up here and drafted in the fifth round, I know nothing is given to you. You know, and only thing I had to show them mentally that I could do it, and physically, I'm like, I knew I'm undersized and all that stuff, but mentally I could do it, but I'm going to show them that I have something that the other guys doesn't have, because I believe I got up here, a lot of guys were older too, and that helped me out. And then we had John Rounder and all that. They wind up putting me on the practice squad that first year, and as we walk in, we was in Mankato, and the defensive line coach, he said, Ed, why did you do that with John? I said, I just look at John. He'd make one movement. I'm going, he hit my gap, I'm going to hit his gap. Boy, he hit his gap, I'm going to go that gap. I said, just like when Chester McLaughlin was in front of me. I said, I can see all this right here. He said, you know something? You're going to be all right. And as we coming, it hit me a little bit right here. So to put you on practice squad, they got to release you and all that, cut you and all that. So another coach picked me and this other guy up, and he bringing us to the office. He said, yeah, we're going to put you on practice squad, but we're going to keep you for the future. And I swear to God, when he said that, it's been on the smile on my face every day, because I knew from that point on they had a plan for me. I knew from that point on you need to start studying. Jack Del Rio helped me out with that once he got here. And from that point on, I put the time in to studying my plays. I took the time in to studying offensive blocking scheme and stuff like that. I took the time listening to Money Kiffin. I took the time at Tony Johns just going around soft-spoken and just saying, you know, putting his input in. And all of that helped me.
How much football IQ did you have coming out of Clemson? Like, did you know the game? Did you just play with instinct?
No, I played with instinct because we had Chester McLaughlin was in front of me. Brinson Buckner was in front of me. Wayne Simmons was another linebacker. Ashley Shepard was another linebacker. We had like three other guys, DBs, that went to the pros. So we had the number one defense and then the number two defense. Dude, we were just athletes out there playing. And the defensive line, we had two layers of defense. And Brinson Buckner was a backup defensive lineman. So we just made plays.
Yeah. I think that's so fascinating because I think that's the behind-the-scenes stuff that it takes to make it in the NFL. Yes. Is you have to be smart in a football sense. And I'm not saying that, you know, ACTs, SATs, but – when you come out of a place like Clemson and you guys basically just ran around and made plays.
I was in college. A guy asked me, I'd be in the film room sleep. He said, Ed, why'd you go to sleep? I said, look here. 30 minutes into the film, I already done seen all the plays I need to see. I say, I got it up here. Somewhere or another, I just had a computer. When I see it, I got it. And he's like, you go to sleep each and every week, but you come out of each game with about like 10 to 12 tackles. I say, I got the play. I got it right here. I'll be out there telling the chef, it's coming over here. It's coming over there. No, no, no. Hold up. It's coming over here. They'd be like, okay, it's coming over here. Move left, move left. Dude,
So you just saw the game naturally.
Yeah. And I'm talking about, at one time, you know how they say when it slows up?
Yeah.
Dude, when it slows up, I'm talking about when you see all of it, it's so slow.
It's like the Matrix.
Yes, it's just like the Matrix. It's so slow, and you just see yourself, bam, bam. I'm like, yeah, what I'm going to do? I'm going to do this, bam, bam, got it. And I just be right there, and I can see the guy come right here, and I can see the running back. Yeah, gotcha. It's a lovely feeling. And then next thing you know, it starts speeding up. The older you get, like, it's time for me to leave this game. Yes.
Well, you were a monster, man. You led the team in tackles many times. You had, you know, almost 20 sacks, 4 interceptions. Didn't sound like you were much of a ball hockey linebacker back
then. They didn't record tackle for loss, but I took pride in tackle for loss. And like I said, you know, I had John around. We had a great defensive line in front of us, but it was so great playing behind those guys, and it helped out playing next to guys that you all understand each other, and that plays a fact too. Because when we got here in 91, 92, dude, we'll go to a game. You'll see more Green Bay Packer fans in there, more Chicago Bears fan in there than Viking fan. But when Coach Green got here, we had one losing season. In our second year, I think we were ranked number one defense. And the following year, I think we were ranked number three, something like that. So it was, we used to watch highlights on the news. They have NFL films that had highlights. Every time is a Viking defense getting scored on. Our second year, they stopped, each and every year, that second year, they stopped showing those. Because we were making plays, so they couldn't, you know, we were just that bad before we got here.
Yeah, you're no longer the doormat at all.
No. I thought they were going to make a movie about us. Because, you know, they'll make a movie about the worst team, like Cleveland back. Oh, they the worst team in football, the worst team in baseball. That's who they make a movie about.
Do you think that you could play, let's say go back to 1998, which I do want to touch on with a couple mm-hmm. questions. Go back to 1998, you had a phenomenal year. The team had a phenomenal year. Let's call that your prime, okay? 1998, the peak of your game. Do you think that you could take your characteristics and attributes in 1998 and apply them today and play today in today's game? Long pause.
Yes, 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 yes.
Why do you got to think so deeply about that?
No. You got to give me. Got to give me John Randall in front of me, okay?
No. I'm saying,
hey.
No,
hey,
Johnny's hey. At Johnny's on the course smoking a cigar right now.
No.
Yep. And you got to be out there, and Rick Spielman's gonna say, hey, Eddie Mack, we got a contract for you. We want you to finish out the rest of the season. I'm not saying that in your current condition. I'm just saying, if you felt like you did in 1998, do you think that your skill set could apply to the game today and still be successful?
Oh, yeah. I really think so because I didn't look at the game was like me and this. A lot of guys is out there just playing. They're running. I like Kendricks because he knows the game and he studied the offense. And like I was saying, once you learn the offensive blocking scheme, you pretty much got you got the offensive plays. And a lot of guys are just out there running around. And those guys that understand the game, they play for longer than 5 years.
Yeah.
Whenever you see a guy is released by his third year, his fourth year, he's not a student of the game. You know, and like you said, you take those guys that was a student of the game, then yes, they could play at that on the prime of their year, they probably could play. But
you know,
guys get bigger and faster.
Yeah.
You know. You got to put up. Now, hold up.
What?
Because we didn't have that many weights like they have now and all that stuff. You know how they work out now. You sit there like, you jump in a ladder? What is all this right here on the ground? What is that?
Yeah.
You know, you had tires then. Okay, put leg between the tires. But that would be great to see on Madden.
Well, I love that answer because I think I do think that that's the right answer because I think that obviously you know how to, you have a nose for the football, and as long as you can give yourself that extra half a step to know mentally where that play is probably going to go,
yeah,
then you've won the game. You've won that snap.
That's part of it, and that's why you catch an athlete just out there running around, not a student of it. He's going to get caught.
Yeah.
Because he's just going to be out there running. But you catch the one that understand and see what the offense is trying to do.
Yeah.
And just block his scheme. You're like, man, that play going to be right there. But you're like, no. I'm going to meet you over there.
Yeah.
And that's what I used to do. They're like I try to teach the kids today. I say, look here, man. There's going to be a counter. Bam, the play going to be right here. That guy going to be looking to hit you, okay? Beat him to it.
Yeah. Okay?
Next, this is what happened to one kid. They run a counter. The tight end seeing, the tackle seeing, bam. He tried to do it his way. Come to the sideline. I said, ooh, buddy, that looked pretty bad. So you didn't see that, did you? He go back out there. Two plays later, the same thing happened. I see him do everything that I taught him. I said, hit him. I said, as soon as you hit him like that, cross his face, that running back going to be right there. Next thing you know, he make the tackle. They got about like 4 yards. But I say, good job. He run to the sideline. Coach, did you see me? I say, yeah, I saw you, baby. I see everything out here. And see, those guys that understand what the offense is trying to do to you, they probably can play. But the ones just out there, you know, they got a bunch of great athletes out there just running around.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be a little tough because guys are getting better and better.
So let everybody know when you're talking about your kids and they're calling you coach, where you're coaching at.
Coach Eastridge.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Yeah. So you're out there molding young football players as a coach. Yeah. And so
we was also helping out at Cooper, too.
Gotcha.
Are you someone who deals with chronic soreness? Maybe it's sore and achy joints from an old injury, or you're an active person who pushes their bodies, or maybe it's age-related arthritis. Whatever the cause, I have the solution for you. It's called IASO. IASO, and it's a revolutionary therapy device that uses 100-year-old scientifically proven cold laser technology. This South Korean wonder device is the only cold laser device that can be used at home and hands-free. Most of the time, you have to go to some sort of hospital or clinic to get this type of treatment because of the size of the machine. But IASO has engineered this potent light therapy into a device that fits into the palm of your hand. I use my devices all the time on my arthritic knee and my bulging disc in my neck with relieving results. And guess what? It's all done pain-free. Go to wellscare.net or bestbuy.com. That's wellscare.net or bestbuy.com to purchase and start enjoying your life pain-free with IASO.
Let me circle back to 1998. I think everybody in Vikings world sort of knows what happened in 1998.
We was already in Miami, baby.
let me just ask you in a generic sense, okay? You know, Randy Moss's rookie year, high-flying offense. Your defense was kicking butt too. How do you describe from top to bottom, start to finish, that 98 season?
That 98 season, I believe that was Randy's first year.
That was Randy's year.
Randy's rookie year.
Did you? Did you know right away when he got drafted and the first time you guys saw him in practice, you're like, damn, this spindly, skinny little guy is something special, or did you still have some doubts?
The guy was fast, and we were so lucky, and thank God Coach Green picked him because Coach Green always gave a bunch of guys an opportunity, and it gave Randy a big opportunity, and we were so lucky. Here we go. At that time, we throw the ball down the field. We get an interference. Guess where the ball at? It's on the 10-yard line. So a lot of those opportunity hatters, and that helped everybody out. And we just, the offense went out there and scored quickly, so we got a lot of teams back against the wall trying to catch up with us. So the defense was like, hey, and John Randall be like this, hey, babe, I'm getting to the quarterback. I'm like, go ahead and get to the quarterback. I got the draw and all that stuff. And we put a lot of guys on the heels because they were playing catch-up ball.
Yeah. Had the lead all the time.
Yeah. They were playing catch-up ball. And we got lucky. I want to say lucky, but the opportunity came to us. And some teams we played, their main guys were hurt. So we balled out that year on defense because now they playing catch-up ball. Johnny getting to the quarterback. Now you're just making plays. It wasn't black and blue because we was up on you all right. You look up, okay. We up by like 14 points or 17 points, something like that.
So let me cut all the way to the NFC Championship game in which you guys were hosting the Atlanta Falcons.
Oh, they beat us.
I deserve it. I know that. I think everybody knows that. I'm not asking. I don't want to ask you about necessarily the game, but I want to ask you about that night. Do you recall the emotions that you were feeling when you finally got home after the buzz and the disappointment of everybody in that dome? What was going through your mind that night?
It wasn't actually that night. It was that morning. We had seven guys to get an MRI, and I was one of those seven. I tore my first quarter. I tore my knee, right knee ACL. So that night after the game, we had seven guys to go to the doctor to get an MRI.
Dang.
So we wasn't able to play. We had two linebackers. One guy didn't dress, and the other guy wasn't hurt, so we only had two linebackers. Robert got hurt that game. Johnny was hurt prior game. Another running back got hurt. Man, we was beat up. And so I wasn't even worried about that because I had to have surgery.
Yeah. So I guess I never realized how beat up you guys were going into that game and then through that game.
Yeah. And actually, I was in Denver Pro Bowl having surgery. There sure was.
So you made the Pro Bowl and then couldn't participate because of your knee.
Yeah.
Man.
And that was another chance. So we're back here. Everybody, we hung out and everything. So next thing you know, guys are complaining and all this stuff, what they're going to do, what happened, all that. I said, what y'all yelling about? I said, I don't have a contract. I tore up my knee, and I got to go have surgery. And y'all up there crying because you lost the game? I said, come on, man. I don't want to need to be crying.
So let me ask you this then. So if the Vikings had won that game and went to the Super Bowl, how do you think you would have handled not being able to play in the Super Bowl from a mental standpoint?
Oh, I'd have been all right.
Really?
At the end of the day, it's a football game.
Man, you wouldn't be like super tore up like emotionally?
Nope. I got to get my knee right and try to win back my job for next year.
All right,
soon that happened, that was my mentality then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Soon it happened.
Now, let me play another hypothetical question for you. Let's say the Vikings win the Super Bowl. You get your Super Bowl ring, 3 or 4 months later. Does that Super Bowl ring feel deserving or feel hollow?
Oh, it deserves. I ain't worrying about that. Missing one game.
I know.
If we didn't win all them 16 games and won, hey, you just win one game, did you go? Nope. You got to win those games prior to get there to the big dance. Hey, that question is a good question because that's a question that when you're talking to them kids, that kid that you know that's not going to play, you know that kid is not going to play. And you still got to keep that kid interested into the game. He know he's not going to play, but he's going to get some scraps. And he's going to be just as happy with those scraps or just as happy to be a part of something. And that answer is just like, I'd have been just as happy. No, I probably couldn't participate, but, hey, I did. I was alone for the ride, and I participated. But, I was hurt for that game. I'm hurt.
Man, I got to admit, you're a better man than me. Because if I'm in that situation, hypothetically, I'm like, son of a B.
Yeah,
like,
no,
I made it this far. We get to the big game. I don't get the chance to be on the field and have that confetti fall on me, knowing that I put my blood, sweat, and tears out there. Now,
yeah,
your answer is much more mature than mine, because in that interim, you would, because you hadn't had surgery yet, because most of the time with those type of knee surgeries, they don't do surgery right away. So you could have been a valuable asset in the meeting rooms, helping those guys get ready, helping the guy behind you that's going to play for you, help him get ready. And I think the mature answer, which you just gave, was like, you would feel just a part of that win because you knew behind the scenes for those, you know, 6, 7, 10 days of preparation, you are just as important. And that's sort of the message that you, as you kind of bring it to the present time, yes, you tell these kids like, hey, man, even if you're not starting and you're not getting enough playing time, you're still a valuable participant.
Just like I tell them, it's the trainers, it's your parents, it's everybody that putting this pie together. It takes all of us. And, you know, because I was in Denver by myself. The only body I had, me, Fred Zimmerletti, and we worked it out. Trust me, nobody. Get up, Eddie, come do this, come do that. No. Get your butt up, come here, and he's going to beat me down each and every day to get me back on that field. And so that's the mentality that I had, you know. That what made it so funny, because when I came back, all the guys were, you know, we had our last meeting, we downtown somewhere, and everybody talking about the season, bam, 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 talking about it. And I'm like, I'm the one should be here complaining, but I said I'm not complaining because if something got me here, it's something bigger than me. I said it's gonna be all right. Man, and so that's my mentality right there.
Yeah, I do love that. We kind of alluded to your injuries and stuff. How are you feeling right now?
I'm feeling pretty good.
How's the knee feel?
Yeah. It hurts me when the knees feel good.
When it's cold out?
The hip flexor a little bit. Every time I play golf, I believe it's trying to tell me to stop playing golf. That's what my hip flexor is trying to tell me, stop playing golf.
And you're like, no, yeah. I will never give this up.
No.
I will do whatever it takes to keep playing.
Because I don't shoot to play with Tiger Woods them on Sunday. I shoot to play with John Rahm and all these scratch golfers. Think they're going to play on something with Tiger Woods.
Yeah. When you got out of the league, I always love asking this question to former players because it's a lot of similar answers, but a lot of different answers at the same time. When did you know that it was time for you to hang up the cleats?
A good one. So, contract was up.
Yep.
So, I'm back at the facility because once I had surgery, we had I had post-op. Next thing you know, I'm walking the next day. So I get back, I go to California, talk to the agent and all that. Then I work my way back to Minnesota. So I'm on the treadmill walking and riding the bike. Fred Zimmerletti said, what are you doing? Everybody from upstairs like, what? So they were surprised that I was so far advanced than the normal people. And once I got back to Minnesota and talking to Coach Green, and me and my agent had talked, I actually told Coach Green, I said, hey. He said, Ed, what y'all thinking about? I said, Coach Green, I could give you 1 year. He started laughing. He said, yeah, right. He said, yeah, right. He said, well, we talked to your guys. You're thinking about five for 30, something like that. I said, Coach, I'm not going to even lie to you now. I could give you maybe one or two. He said, Ed, look here. You got to give me at least five. He said, get all your money, half of your money, in the first 3 years. I said, you know something? I suck it up for 3 years.
Yeah.
Because I knew it right then. I had this one done, my left knee done earlier, my right knee, my left hip flexor. Once you start getting dinged like that, you know time is coming.
Yeah.
You know, it's a young man's sport. Your knees is not made for it. And when it's time for you to go, it's time for you to go.
Yeah. Was it hard when you kind of made that realization and you mentally?
No, it wasn't hard because I was just, you know, thank God that I was just happy to be here to be alone for the ride for 10 years.
Yeah, you had a great career. You know, that's the thing.
It was, when it's time to go, it's time to go. Yeah. I swear to God, I saw, I could have done this. I was at a place. Lady get kicked out of the bar. Husband said, look here, we're leaving. Don't you know she wouldn't leave? She was holding on between the doors like this, and he was pulling her out like this.
Like
she
cartoon.
Wouldn't leave. I could have took that perspective. I'm not leaving. But like I told you, each and every year it was like a youth movement. So it made me appreciate and worked hard. And when that time came, I was like, I'm happy and content because I wasn't supposed to get a scholarship to go to college, wasn't supposed to get drafted. And I'm like, each and every day I was happy just to be here.
Yeah.
I'm just happy to be around these guys that I sit there like, man, that's John Randall, that's Randall Cunningham, that's Randall McDaniel. Oh, I got a quick story about that. And Randall McDaniel always put me in my place. And Randall was like this, his locker and my locker. So when I get up here, yeah, that's the Miller again? There you go. Keep drinking the Miller Lite, baby. So when I first get here, they were talking about striking. I'm like, what? Striking? What are y'all striking for? This is the best life of your life. What are y'all striking? How are we going to strike? So we get a paycheck. I'm looking at every 2 weeks. I'm looking at, damn, $1,200. Randall's showing me a check for $1.2 million. And showing me another one for $100,000+. I said, look here, big fella. I can't strike. I said, I can't strike. I said, I need every dime I can get. And then they put you on practice squad. You get half of that. So I'm like, nah, I'm trying to get a second and third job.
Hey, different perspectives. I have a lot of respect for the guys that went through those strikes because that is a hard decision to make.
Yes,
man.
Yes. And they wasn't making any money back then. So
yeah, it was the right thing to do.
You making that decision. You know, not making any money.
Yeah. I'm gonna ask a question or two more, and then I'm gonna let you guys kind of ask some questions if you'd like. So kind of keep your questions in your holster here.
You want a hat?
You didn't get a hat? Well, that's not up to us.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can get you a hat, hopefully. So keep your questions in your holster.
We're Victor. Talk to Victor.
Victor's running audio. I don't think he's giving out hats. So I find it interesting, when I looked at your career, you played with Mike Tice.
Yes, yes.
And Mike Tice was also eventually became your coach.
No.
Oh, he didn't?
No, uh-uh.
Wait.
Coach Green last year, and I was done when Coach Green was done. Coach Green was here 10 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so then when you retired, that's when Tice came in.
Yep, Tice was tight end.
That's right. That's why I was like,
dude, if you look off
by a year.
Yeah, and Tice actually was quarterback at Maryland? Yes. And Tice was tight end. And he was always, Tice would always write in his tablet everything Coach Green said, thinking and knowing that he's going to be in the coaching field.
Okay, well, so that's my back pedal recovery question because I botched that question. Bad research.
Yeah.
So you saw in Mike Tice the ability to be a head coach when he was a player because of his preparation.
Yeah. And I think they brought him back to be the tight end coach.
Yes.
He actually played tight end here, and then they brought him back to be the tight end coach.
But you saw those attributes as a player.
Yes, when he was a player, he was already taking stuff down.
Man.
Because at that time, Tice was tall, and he was a hell of a blocker. And like I said, just like with Pete, those guys make some of the best coaches because they know they're not going to be out there for, take it easy, they're not going to be out there for the glorification of the plays. They're going to be out there, they have to know the game to get on the field, and they have to know the game to understand everything around it. And like Pete Bursick, he backed me up for many and many years and it gave me confidence every time I came out of the game because I would take myself. At that time, I had to play every play. But when Pete got there, I was like this. Pete, come in. Because yeah. I knew
I need
Pete,
a break.
Pete knew everything. I knew Pete wasn't going to mess up. People going to make Pete make a play. You're not going to score on Pete. And guys like Pete and Tice, they make great coaches because they, you know, like I'm telling you, like some guys are not going to get on the field, but some guys going to be the smartest guy. And to get on the field, they got to know everything going on.
Yeah, and just so everybody's understanding, he's talking about Pete Bursich, who was a linebacker for the Vikings when he played and also is now the radio
color. Like you're talking about Minuski,
analyst.
Too. When I got here, yeah. Pete was just like Minuski.
Yeah, yeah. And he's alluding to Greg Minuski, who was my linebacker coach in San Diego, who also had some ties here to Minnesota. And so there is some crossover with some people that we know. We have any questions in the audience? Yes. Well, why don't you, why don't you come up here, because we are recording this audio, and I don't want to have to repeat what you said. So, I trust you to come right up here and grab this mic.
So, we've had some historic linebackers: Matt Blair, Fred McNeil, Wally Hilgemert, with a lot of issues, head issues. They've died, whatever. How do you both? Because you both played linebacker. From that standpoint, how do you address that? And also, I have a question about what your feeling is with our linebackers currently. I know we already talked about Kendricks. You like him. Thanks.
Thank you. You want to tackle that first question?
Yeah, we spoke about the first one a little bit. It's one of those things. We only own this life for a short length of time, and it gets me how they try to relate everything to the, you know, NFL, but nothing has to do from your youth, college, and all that is just for the NFL. And you know, you got to look at the entire background of that person. You got to look at the stuff that they do when they're not on the field. And yes, it's sad when those things do happen. And yes, it may have what percentage of that has to do with sports? Don't know. What percentage that have to do with some extra curricular activities that you're doing at home? What percentage does that have to do with how you grew up and the sports that you played then? Nobody really knows. So they just who's the biggest dog in this fight? That's the NFL. It's the NFL fault. So you have to be able to, you know. You have to be able to understand the whole dynamics, but it's sad when that happens, but a lot of guys do not go through that, too. So, you know, you got one or two guys, but maybe five or six or maybe 10 or 12, but how many people have been playing NFL football for all since 100-something years?
You know, I'll give you my take on that, and I'll give it back to Eddie Mack to answer the second part of your question about the current state of the Vikings linebackers. You know, I 100% agree with Eddie. Look, the NFL, I think in some ways, is unfairly treated when it comes to head injuries and CTEs and concussions. Look, there are concussions with a lot of sports, and I understand that there's a higher incidence of concussions with the NFL. All of that is true. But what is not true is this narrative that they push out there that if you play in the NFL, you're going to get CTE. They came out with this study a couple years ago that was found to be completely biased, and it was not actually approved by third-party experts because there was no control group. And so with any major study, I don't care what it is, you like to have a control group. I have talked to doctors about this. I've talked to neurologists about this, and they say, look, don't believe what you believe with all the media hype, because there is no control group when it looks at the general population. Yes, do we have guys in the NFL that have CTE? They can't even tell you. Ask a neurologist right now what causes CTE. They don't really know.
No.
They don't really know. And so to irresponsibly just always target the NFL, I think is not fair. Now, could there be a correlation? 100% there could be a correlation. But we don't know what that number is. Is it 99%? Is it 20%? And without a control group, because they just don't go slicing dead bodies, their brains apart, and start looking for this plaque in their brain. You know, they have found CTE plaque in 18-year-old kids that die in car accidents. Why? Why an 18-year-old? What life did he lead? How many concussions did he have when he was a kid? What's his lifestyle? Is he a drinker? Is he a smoker? Does he do extracurriculars? So if they're finding CTE in 18-year-old kids that die in car accidents, why all of a sudden is the NFL being villainized when a player dies at 65 years old because of these other medical issues, and then they find out that he has CTE? I do think that there is a correlation. Look, I'm not stupid. I know that boxers, NFL players do have a higher incidence of cognitive issues when they get older. But we don't know what the percentage is. And for us to go out there and say there's an absolute direct correlation between the NFL, football, and CTE, that's irresponsible. And every neurologist will tell you that, but they don't report that to the media because it's not great headlines.
One of the hardest hit I had was the best hit. A guy hit me so hard, and I spun in the air like that.
You helicoptered?
And I hit the ground. I'm like, that was a pretty good one.
That was kind of fun.
But yeah, I like I'm saying, I totally agree with that. And we live in the United States. We got to keep moving now. We can't stop all the kids from playing sports just because some doctor said something. Yeah. And, you know, the NFL have done a great job for me, my family, and for a lot of people around here, bring entertainment to Minnesota for years, South Dakota, North Dakota, Iowa, part of Wisconsin. Hey, it's a great business, it's a great company, and it helps out a lot of poor families too. Guys playing in the league. And so we can't overlook all those dynamics, because if you look at the percentage of the people that it happens to, it's a small percentage, but hey, yes. A little bit happened, but hey, the awards is a great, this right here is the sport have taught me so much, football and sports in general. And the ultimate award is to be here so your family can see you on television.
Yeah. And so
you was talking about, quick story, you was talking about the linebackers. I remember one year I got hurt. And I'm talking about in the middle of a play. And I'm walking off the sideline. And a little bird hit me on my shoulder pad. I said, Ed. I said, what? You about to go to the sideline? I said, yep. Another little bird hit the other shoulder. Bye, ladies. Did you get that hat?
No.
Go to the gift shop.
I didn't get
my order. So. Oh, shit. Bye-bye. So another little bird hit me on my other shoulder. Say, look back at the huddle. I said, why do you want me to look back at the huddle? He want me to go to the sideline. No, look back at the huddle. So I look back at the huddle. They're on our 5-yard line about to go in. So I look back at the huddle. I see Jack Del Rio. Get your butt out here. Get your butt out here. So I walk back to the huddle. The little bird on my right shoulder, dummy. So I walk back to the huddle. We break down and we call the huddle. And I look up. I said, Lord, please let him run the ball the other way. Bam, bam, bam. We stopped him. Walking to the sideline. Jack said, what are you thinking? What are you thinking? I said, man, my shoulder was killing me. My neck was killing me. He said, there's nobody behind you. There's nobody behind you. You got to go every play and every day. Hey, man, how many plays have Barr played a full season in 3 years?
Who are you talking about?
Barr?
No.
Boy, getting paid a lot of money. Getting paid a lot of money. I love Kendricks, too. Getting paid a lot of money. Look at Hunter. Hunter played, what, 3 plays in 4 years? It's a youth movement going to happen, okay? Hey. Someone, we got a bunch of guys hurt, and it hurts them, because if the defense is not ranked in the top 5, we're going to have a tough season. And it hurts because when those guys, Kendrick, them, they work so well together, and you could tell when they get on the field, the chemistry, one of them get on the field, and you don't have the rest, the chemistry is not there. And when none of them is there, it just holes everywhere. I'm talking about We barely lost a game, what, 2 weeks ago? And everybody on the defense, I didn't know. I'm like, who at the front seven? I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, I love all the linebackers, but somewhere or another, youth movement going to happen because we got more guys to miss plays, and you're getting paid X amount of dollars. That's just like the running back in Dallas. Zeke, you're getting paid $15 million, and you getting 20 yards a game. You could draft somebody else to do that. You know, so a youth movement going to happen, and it hurts because you sit there like, well, Coach, I've been hurt. I know I could draft me another one. He won't be hurt. I got 5 years out of him.
Well, they do say in this business, your best ability is your availability.
Yes.
So if you're not out there, and look, some of it's how these guys control. Now, I don't know if it's like what they're doing beforehand, their training mechanisms and stuff like that, but, you know, you tear a peck. That's a rough deal. You know, you hurt your neck. You're playing physical. You hurt your neck. It just happens. But when you start adding it all up, and then they red flag these players for being injury prone, and you're not gonna, you wouldn't make an investment in a stock that is so volatile, right? And so it's the same thing with us. We're just human commodities. And so if you're going to invest money into somebody, you got to be available and dependable. Anybody else that has a question for Eddie Mack? He'd be brave enough to...
See, like you look like you have a question.
He asked a question. You call, you know, John something? Randall Motormouth? Motor, motor crazy was John Randall?
You can tell when he mic'd up. I swear to God, when he mic'd up, you're like, I'm like, oh, hey, John, you mic? Oh, God, here we go. This is going to be a great show today. This is going to be a good one. But what he did his homework on his opponent, and he talked junk to his opponent every game to get him out of his game. You know, that come in every game, but when he got mic'd up, that's for everybody back in Hearns, Texas, can see him. Yes.
Yeah, question over here.
Do I remember at Target when I seen you 30 years ago? When, last week? Huh? No, you look beautiful.
Yeah, when are you talking about? Are you talking about recently?
When? She just asked me, do I remember her seeing her at Target 15 years ago? Hold on, you know I got this concussion-like symptoms, lady. I can't remember where. Hold up. I'm at the casino, Mystic Lake. No, ma'am, I do not remember. You're talking too much now.
Yeah, now you're talking. She's saying that.
Cut her off the mic now.
Yeah. I don't have to repeat what she just said.
Yeah.
Well, listen, ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys so much for coming out.
Thank y'all very much.
This is the Unrestricted Podcast. You can find it on the iHeart, Spotify, and Apple platforms. I want to thank, again, Mystic Lake. You guys do such a great job. I mean, the stage is beautiful. The graphics behind us is beautiful. The setup is awesome. I want to thank Curtis for all that. I want to thank Victor for all the audio help. And then the Miller Lite support staff, Kaylee and Feliciana. They have been running around getting you guys some brewskis. So thank you all so much. And I want to thank our main man, Eddie Mack.
Yes, 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 yes. Y'all have a nice evening. Thanks, Mystic Lake. And thank all the fans, Minnesota Viking fans, for being a part of my life for 10 years and 30 years. Yes, ma'am, I'll sign that for you.
Thank you so much, ma'am.
Yes, anytime.
Well, that is going to do it for everybody here at Unrestricted. I want to thank Ed McDaniel, Eddie Mack, for taking the time to come down and hang out with me for a little bit and hang out with you guys. And I want to thank all the fans that came out to Mystic Lake Casino. I want to thank Mystic Lake Casino themselves. They are tremendous hosts. They have a great setup. It sounds great. It feels great. They do a great job down there. So please support Mystic Lake as well. I want to thank you guys as the fans for always supporting this podcast, especially the Brett Favre podcast. My goodness, you guys were amazing. So many downloads, so much support, so much feedback. You know, the Apple podcast platform allows you to do the feedback and to rate the shows. And guess what? Spotify just did the same thing. So if you're a Spotify user for this podcast or any other podcast, please support other podcasts as well that You can now rate them on Spotify as well. So please click those 5 stars. That'd be awesome. I want to thank my sponsors. I want to thank WellsCare.net. You know, now is always the time, I guess, not just the holiday season, but it's always the time to take care of your aches and pains. Get yourself an EOSO device. I promise you, you'll love it. Go to WellsCare.net or go to BestBuy.com and just go to the keyword search. Type in IASO to get your EOSO device. I also want to thank Pat Kelly and his staff at Wexford Harbor Insurance for customized and optimized family and business insurance to fit everything that you want in your family and all your needs and to save you a boatload of money. Please check out Pat and his staff at wexford-harbor.com/unrestricted. And that is going to do it for me. It's been a while since I've thanked my audio guy, Dave Yeager. I do want to thank him for all of his work. You know, he's a working man, but takes some extra time out to help us here at this podcast to put everything together. So I want to thank Dave as well. And that'll do it. Until next time, everybody had a great week. Have a great week, and I'll talk to you on the next one. Bye.